Now, let's spend the rest of the hour, the last 20 minutes, and it's going to move fast, with the superintendent of Rochester Schools, who has been so patient and waiting to join us, and there's a lot going on there. Superintendent Terry Dade, thanks for taking the time. How are you, sir?
Thank you, as always. I appreciate your time.
All right, briefly, let's just start right where the governor says. He says Washington needed to do more for the states because Albany can't do as much for everybody in the state, school districts and everybody else, and he wants Washington to step up and do more. Do you agree with the governor on that point, Mr. Superintendent?
I agree with the governor on just kind of feeling his sentiments with regards to his budget crisis and ours here in Rochester. What he said, what we'd love to do more for our constituents, but we're out of money. So when that happens, you always look up to see where you can secure additional funds. And I think it's been no secret that we've had to strive for additional funds from the state. The state is saying that they don't have it, so our next look would be at the federal level, particularly during this pandemic.
All right, so some numbers thrown around, especially last night, just want to make sure we're clear here. RCSD finds itself, what do you need to cut? An additional $24 million, which was already about $60 million in cuts? What's the number you're looking to kind of settle on there, Mr. Superintendent?
$87 million in deficit for the 2021 school year. So an additional $26.5 million as a result of what I had predicted would occur, which was not receiving any increase in foundation aid for the school year.
Looking down the list here, you did mention, and I want to make sure we're clear on this, that every year there's a number of teachers who resign or retire, so there's attrition. You're hoping that a lot of the staff cuts could be through attrition. It doesn't look to me like it could be all of them. How many total staff and teaching cuts are we talking about?
Total for staff is around 340 staff members in the entire district, of which 280 are in our teaching staff. Over the past 3 years, we've averaged approximately 250 teachers retiring or resigning on average each of those years. So we do hope that the vast majority of that 280 will be captured through attrition that occurs naturally.
Let me read part of an email to RTA teachers from the head of RTA, Adam Urbanski. Quote, cutting as close to the classroom as possible seems to be the RCSD's persistent and unfortunate choice. At the same time, they fiercely refuse to make any significant reductions at central office and in administrative overhead. This reckless strategy can only lead to further undermine the public's confidence in the city school district and to a continued exodus of families and students from city schools. End quote. You want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, just a few points of clarification. We have made significant cuts to the ASAR bargaining unit, in addition to central office, that is in excess of 10% of the staffing there, while still trying to maintain minimal numbers to cuts to teachers. They're our largest employee group. Right now, the cuts are hitting our teachers at approximately 8%. So cutting more in central office than we are at the teaching standpoint. With regards to cutting away from the classroom, when you're right-sizing a district, it is going to impact classroom teachers, unfortunately. So as we've closed now, the proposal is five schools in total. Those students are now going to be filling classrooms that are under-enrolled throughout the district, which results in a decrease in staffing. So it's not taking teachers away from students that leads to extreme class sizes. You'll see very minimal class size growth, but through right-sizing the district, take into account 6,500 students less than we had 10 years ago, you will see a decrease in staffing, unfortunately, as a result of right-sizing.
I want to talk a little bit about where some of the cuts are that have drawn some intense criticism from, especially from critics who say that we may end up breaking the law here. The special education cuts, and I know you know that it drew a letter of condemnation from the Community Advisory Committee that helped create the efforts in special ed going back over the last couple of years. And reading from WXXI's James Brown, reading from the Democrat and Chronicle's Justin Murphy, chronicling especially the last 24 hours, a quote now as they cite Melanie Funchess's letter. She's a former school board member, and she's a part of the committee. And she writes the following. She says the cuts would inevitably lead back to noncompliance with the district's legal obligations and would violate the civil rights of students with disabilities, end quote. I assume you disagree, but I want to let you answer that. Do you disagree with that?
I definitely disagree. So I'm not going to put forth any proposal that's going to take away a student's civil right. I'm also not going to put forth a proposal that would not allow our students to receive the mandated services that they need and deserve each and every day. So like I did with my mid-year layoffs, my guarantee to parents right now is if their child next year is not in a position to receive mandated services as a result of any layoffs or reductions or just poor practice, that we will fix it. That's what we're doing now. That's what we've tried to do in years past. So compliance is another piece that's coming up. RCSD has not been able to put forth a successful model for the structure of special education to meet the needs deemed by the state of New York. So no one can say that anything has been solved with a consent decree that is not even in place at this time. We have wrapped our heads around this, looking at best practice from back home all the way to our colleagues here in New York to figure out the model that's going to allow us to be compliant and to continually see progress of our students to meet metrics that are encapsulated in the proposed consent decree.
Do you expect more pushback from the board on this issue? I mean, what has to happen if the board is saying, if the board ends up agreeing with the letter penned by the advisory committee that, look, we can't do this? I mean, what happens? Let listeners know what this process is going to be like.
So my team has already answered nearly 200 questions in writing to the Board of Education, so we'll continue to supply them with the information and data necessary to make informed decisions. I always counter anyone who says that you can't do something with the plan of how we're going to make it happen. So there's a lot of conversations I'm having with New York State Education Department because I don't want it to be left just on my shoulders. So working with New York State Ed, who is here every month to look at our progress towards meeting metrics for the district, looking at our models and processes, our in compliance even this year is resulting. So I want to make sure people don't think that we're meeting every requirement now with our current staffing. So there's still work to be done across the board in the RCSD. And we have some tough decisions. We're going to have to do more with less, but we will not allow it to be said that we won't be providing our students with mandated services because that's our legal obligation, and we will fulfill every one of those obligations.
All right. Let's move on to another source of controversy of sorts, and that's the budget for East, proposing a $6 million cut to the East budget. And I want to read from East Superintendent Dr. Sean Nelms, who says, quote, "We are shocked by the 30% budget cut that the RCSD Superintendent Terry Dade has proposed for East. The Educational Partnership Organization budget for East is approved by the Board of Education and is not part of Mr. Dade's budget purview. To be clear, we were not consulted on any of these cuts, nor have we participated in discussions with the superintendent about district-wide cuts, and a proposed $6 million cut to the East budget, if approved, would sadly put an end to much of our important work." He says, essentially, that's the end of this partnership with the U of R, and it goes backwards for East. I'll let you respond to that now, Mr. Superintendent.
So some of that I'll agree with, that we don't want any cuts to occur at any of our schools. There is great progress happening at East, and it is within the purview of the board because it's a contract between the University of Rochester and the Board of Education. What I'll disagree with is it's very disingenuous to say that I did not alert the superintendent of East with regards to the budget crisis that we're facing. I asked in writing for reductions to occur at East as we all work towards eliminating this massive deficit. I could not rest knowing that two of the schools in RCSD had additional staffing to the tune of 11 counselors, 6 social workers, 13 reading teachers, 16 teachers on assignment, and an admin team that exceeds my SEG. My employee group, that if we're truly all working together to decrease this deficit, and I'm taking away from all other schools in the district that the EPO needed to partake as well. So that was the intent. I did reach out to Superintendent Nelm, so we may disagree on what the reductions might be. That is not my decision to make, but it is my responsibility to make a recommendation to eliminate a massive deficit for next year of $87 million.
Do you feel like if that $6 million were not cut from East, that East would not be sharing in the pain that a district is feeling right now, that East would be spared in a way that would be unfair?
I do. I get emails from principals all the time saying, how can we cut from their buildings and their successful programs while East does not see reductions? By way of staffing, if everything were to go unchanged, East would be reduced by one staff member for next year. We're talking about hundreds of teachers being impacted, social workers, counselors all across the district. I'm not sure that that's equitable or fair as we think of how do we provide supports for all of our students in the RCSD and that no one can remain unscathed in this tough road ahead.
All right, let's get back to the schools. You mentioned school closures. Which will close?
Right now, in addition to the repurposing of 44 and 57, we are also a closure recommendation for School 20, which is a pre-K through 6 elementary school. School 43, which is a pre-K through 6 elementary school, and changing the configuration of school number 3, turning from a K-8 to a middle school, having 7th and 8th grade students.
How do you make the decision on which schools really ought to be sort of shuffled in this way?
So there's a criteria that was established before I arrived here in Rochester. Superintendent Loewengard did some analysis with our team and recommended to the board school closures at the end of his tenure here. So I took that criteria, which includes things like the standards of the building shape, whether it's up for renovation, the enrollment of capacity of the building, are we even close to meeting capacity or is the building under-enrolled, and how are they doing with their academic performance across the reading, math, and other measures. We also looked at parity across zones. So those three schools are in each of our three zones in the district to make sure that other schools in those zones could absorb those students. So a lot goes into it to make sure that we're making the right decisions and continuing to serve our students. But closing a school is never an easy decision. And unfortunately, it should have been done a long time ago. Superintendent Vargas left a recommendation document for the board stating that one school should close per year until we right-size the district. Unfortunately, that didn't occur, and now we're at the state where we are for potential closures.
Okay. Robert writes to the program to say, Evan, thanks to Terry Dade for his willingness to have public discussions of this very challenging question about school funding and budgets. I live near school number 12. I see a long line of school buses, each with only a handful of students. This cannot be efficient. I recognize this is a consequence of school choice, which is good, but can we afford this transportation expense anymore?
Great question from that caller.
Yeah, that's from Robert. Yep.
Thank you, Robert, for that. I do not believe that we can sustain this moving forward. We are looking closely at our placement process, making sure that we're trying to keep our students within the zones, which is our policy at this point, but I'm not sure we've done a great job with actually enforcing that policy. So we want to maintain school choice. But if we can look at, do our zones meet the needs of the intent nearly two decades ago? So there may need to be a restructuring of the zones here in Rochester to get students closer to their actual neighborhood while still allowing family choice. But we can't have buses traveling all over the district. So many students traveling across the city to attend school is just not going to be fiscally sustainable with a transportation budget our size moving forward.
Well, it sounds like you eventually want to do away with school choice.
No, I want to be clear. That's not the intent. There's still ample school choice if we limit families to the actual zone. We have pieces of data to show that there's a lot of students and families making choices outside of their zone, which increases the mileage that our buses are transporting students and the like. So I love to get better at implementation of actual policy, relooking at our zones and the shifting of seats within zones. Some seats in our zones are under where they need to be, and some are over. So I think we need to relook at that because it's been nearly two decades since we've examined that as a city.
Sure, and forgive me, Mr. Superintendent, because this is probably a whole other side conversation on a different day here, but when it comes to zones, to make sure we understand it, what you're proposing, it sounds to me like parents and families can have choice, but within a section of the city, not in any part of the city or within a zone of the city. How would it function?
That's correct. So the policy as it states now is that students and families have options within a zone unless it's a citywide program. I believe that for some instances, families and the district has done a good job of providing choice within the zones and keeping to that. As families move to other addresses across the city, we have not followed suit to say, if you move outside of your zone, you really need to pick a school within that zone as you make a new address choice for your family. So that's where we can tighten up and decrease the mileage that our buses are transporting students across the city. So it's really implementation of a policy that is in place and a relook at our zones to make sure that they're meeting the needs of our community as it sits.
What is the timeline for getting this budget finalized? What happens next?
There'll be 2 weeks of budget deliberations coming up. So starting this upcoming Thursday, so tomorrow evening will be budget deliberation number one for the board, and then 2 weeks later they'll have their second budget deliberation, moving towards a budget vote on May 7th. Along the way, we're answering hundreds of questions posed by the board. We're nearing 200 questions that we've answered in writing so that they can make informed decisions to an approved budget on May 7th.
Is it your view, Mr. Superintendent, that whatever ends up happening with this budget, if it's this that you've proposed or something close to it, if and when it goes through, that there will obviously be pain. Nobody wants to be in this spot. But the next time you've got to do a budget, we're sitting here talking a year from now, it is a very different situation, assuming that we have a somewhat stable society and that there aren't, you know, any other sort of curveballs coming your way. Is this 1 year of intense pain to stabilize, or do you foresee pain every year for a while?
I think that this is going to be the most challenging year that we will hopefully see in our foreseeable future. A few things lead me to that. One, we have no savings account to lean on to mitigate some of the concerns, valid concerns raised by our constituency. Two, we did not receive an increase in foundation aid as we've typically seen in the past few years. So I think this is going to be the toughest year. Oh, in addition to $65 million that we had to cut within the 1920 school year, which we're still remembering. Moving forward, I think there'll still need to be tough decisions to provide stability with our structural deficit. But I do think that we'll be in a much better shape to start adding programming, adding staffing and the like, with my intent to increase our fund balance, our savings account, starting next year and keep building it so that we can make some value add decisions and not always be in cut and deficit mode.
All right. Final minute. You've been very careful and respectful of your not only your predecessor, but in sort of avoiding a blame game. And as I've said, I don't think a blame game is good on its own. I think it's important to understand how mistakes were made to avoid them. Do you know enough now to have an idea for how we got in this spot in this district? And do you feel differently about assessing whether you want to call it blame or culpability?
Yeah, and really, I'm sticking to a lot of things I've said publicly as I'm trying to balance this budget. One, the necessity of fund balance and utilization of savings to mitigate cuts is something that's tough moving forward because those cuts are still needed years down the line. This will be a legit budget where you will not see under budgeting and overspending. So I'm really looking forward to the audit at the end of this year to show that my team did its due diligence to follow the budget, follow our line items, and spend citizen money appropriately. So we're ready for a brighter future moving forward and through some tough times now.
Mr. Superintendent, thanks for hanging in there as we had the governor's news conference, as we always do. But we always appreciate the time with you. I know these are difficult times for the district, but we appreciate the transparency and the conversation, and we look forward to the next one soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Always good. Superintendent Terry Dade from the Rochester City School District during what he has said has been a nightmare time for the district, but one that must happen to find a path forward during this crisis. Thanks to the whole team hanging in there with us today. MRA Stein is the intern, Rob Braden the engineer, Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.